Will you pray with me, please? Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each of our hearts be found acceptable in your sight. O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Last Saturday evening, I had the honor and privilege of officiating another wedding in our beautiful sanctuary. And over the years, I have come to the realization that in the hours and the moments leading up to the start of a wedding service, I am the most powerful person in the building. But something strange happens over the course of that wedding service. My power and command of people's attention begins to rapidly deteriorate, so much so that before the happy couple is back down the center aisle again, I am all but powerless. In the center of the action, in the hugs and smiles and pictures, if anyone notices the preacher, they kind of give me a look that says, "Oh, you're still here?" And of course, that's how it should be. The wedding is about the couple and their marriage covenant before God. It's not about me, but it's still kind of a strange phenomenon I notice every time it happens. This sense that at one moment I have lots of power and people are looking to me, and then suddenly I have none. Perhaps all of us at some point in our lives have had that kind of experience where one moment you're at the center of it all, and the next you're an afterthought, a footnote, if you're even thought of at all. Sometimes this human life, it can be quite the roller coaster ride. From great heights to devastating lows, sometimes the points between those two can be so steep as to leave us feeling dizzy, leaving us to wonder, is God really in this with me? And such is the case with a man by the name of Joseph, whom we meet in the center of our story today. If you were with us last week, we described God's mission statement. We said God's mission statement is right there in Genesis chapter 12. Right there, what God intends. That God's mission, what God is up to in the world, is the intention of the blessing of all the families of the earth. And God will bless all the families of the earth in and through this one particular family, through this couple named Abram and Sarai and their descendants. And we said that the rest of the biblical story really is about the how that is going to come to pass. And we noted that already there was a major obstacle that would need to be overcome, because if God was going to make of Abram and Sarai a great nation, God better get busy, because they were in their mid-70s. And as yet had been unable to conceive and bear any children. Well, between where we left off last week and we pick up our story today, Abram and Sarai get a name change. They become known as Abraham and Sarah. And they have many children, including a son by the name of Isaac. Isaac, in turn, becomes a father himself to children, including twin boys, Esau and Jacob. And then Jacob becomes the father of many children, including 12 sons, the 11th of whom is named Joseph. And Joseph is the story of our focus for today. Now, one of the running themes in the book of Genesis is favoritism. We see this theme where a parent, a mother or father, plays favorites among his or her children. Those of you who are parents right now, please don't do that. But this is a biblical theme, the favoring of one over all the others. And because it makes sense, we said last week that Abram and Sarai, they weren't the youngest or the most handsome or the most faithful or the strongest or fastest, and yet God favored them. God chose them to be the instruments of God's blessing of all the families of the earth. And so that theme continues through many of these stories about Abraham and Sarah and their descendants. This favoring of one child over all the others, and such was the case in the relationship between Jacob and the second youngest of his sons, a man named Joseph. If you've ever seen Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, you know Jacob said, "Joseph's mother, she was quite my favorite wife. I never really loved another all my life, and Joseph was my joy because he reminded me of her." I was the role of Jacob in the 1994 production. As you might imagine, being told they're also Rans did not make his brothers Joseph fans. The fact that Joseph was Jacob's favorite caused his 11 brothers to be filled with a jealous rage. Joseph, for his part, was obnoxious and clueless. Those of you with younger siblings, how many of you had a younger sibling that, or have, that is obnoxious and clueless? Well, the brothers, they devised a plan to rid themselves of their obnoxious, clueless brother who was Daddy's favorite. First, they were going to kill him outright. But then the responsible eldest child, Reuben, thought better of it and convinced his brothers, rather than killing Joseph, to just throw him in a nearby pit, and they did. Then they sat down for their lunch break. And as they were eating, they saw a passing caravan of traders who were on their way down to Egypt. And they said, "Oh, we can profit from this." So they sold Joseph to the traders. And in order to cover their tracks with their father, Jacob, they took Joseph's amazing technicolor dream coat away from him, and they tore it up and dipped part of it in goat's blood, and then they took it back to Father Jacob with a story about how their little brother had been attacked by wild animals and devoured. We pick up our story today in Genesis chapter 39, kind of a long reading, so if you'd like to read along in your pew Bible, you can find it in the first book of the Bible, the 39th chapter, beginning at the first verse. So listen now for a word from God. "Now Joseph was taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought Joseph from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. Joseph was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hands. So Joseph found favor in Potiphar's sight and attended him. Potiphar made Joseph overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So Potiphar left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and with him there, he had no concern for anything but the food that he ate. Now Joseph was handsome and good-looking. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, 'Lie with me.' But Joseph refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, with me here, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my hand. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great wickedness and sin against God?' And although she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not consent to lie beside her or to be with her. One day, however, when he went into the house to do his work, and while no one else was in the house, she caught hold of his garment, saying, 'Lie with me.' But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called out to the members of her household and said to them, 'See, my husband has brought among us a Hebrew to insult us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And when he heard me raise my voice and cry out, he left his garment beside me and fled outside.' Then she kept his garment by her until Potiphar came home. And she told him the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant, whom you have brought among us, came in to me to insult me, but as soon as I raised my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled outside. When his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, saying, "This is the way your servant treated me," Potiphar became enraged. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Joseph remained there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. He gave Joseph favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's care all the prisoners who were in the prison, and whatever was done there, Joseph was the one who did it. The chief jailer paid no heed to anything that was in Joseph's care, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. This too is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So if we were to take a whiteboard and draw a line graph of Joseph's life, it might look like something you would find at Six Flags Over Georgia. Like this roller coaster. Joseph keeps oscillating between being near the very top and then at the very bottom. And this is, by the way, this whole Joseph saga, it is the longest narrative in the Old Testament. So remember, when we're introduced to Joseph, of his father's 12 sons, Joseph is on top. Joseph's the favorite, and Jacob gifts him with this beautiful coat of many colors. And Joseph has this gift of dreams and sees himself standing among his brothers and then bowing down to him. But the next thing you know, his coat is ripped away from his body and he's thrown into a pit, sold into slavery. And then he's in here in Potiphar's house, rising to the position of overseer of everything in Potiphar's possession. And then he's down again, falsely accused of a crime he did not commit. Denied due process, falsely imprisoned. Don't miss the racial undertones in Potiphar's wife's accusation, this Hebrew. He's back at the bottom again. And in prison, he begins to rise. The chief jailer commits to Joseph's care all the prisoners and paid no attention because he knew Joseph had it under control. And spoiler alert, this pattern is going to continue. Joseph will keep rising and falling, eventually becoming Pharaoh's most trusted advisor. And when a worldwide famine strikes, it's Joseph's stewardship, it's Joseph's management and care that ensures that both Egyptians and Hebrews survive. It's a fascinating story. It makes for excellent material for a Broadway production. But the Bible isn't ultimately about Joseph and his amazing technicolor dream coat. It's not ultimately about Egyptian politics or criminal justice systems. Ultimately, the Bible is about God and about us and about you and me. And here's the refrain that I kept running across this week that kept coming back to me over and over in this story. The Lord was with Joseph. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. He gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. The Lord was with him. My friend, the Lord is with you. Maybe you are riding high this morning. Maybe things are going really well. Maybe business is good. Your relationships are strong. Your body is healthy and whole. Or maybe you come this morning at a low point. Maybe things are not good. Maybe you are suffering in your body, in your mind, in your spirit. All the above. Maybe someone has betrayed you and you find yourself in the pit. Maybe you have been slandered and denied due process. Maybe people have used their power to ostracize you and to point out to everyone all the ways in which you really don't belong and you're just at the bottom. My friend, whether you are at the top or the bottom this morning, remember this. When you were baptized, you were adopted into this family story. When you were baptized, you were made heirs of the covenant with Abraham and Sarah and all their generations, all this family with all its ups and downs and triumphs and tragedies. When you were baptized, you were adopted into this covenant. So these aren't just old stories, they're your stories, our stories. And the promise that God made to Abram and Sarai, the promise that God keeps with Joseph, whether he's in the palace or the pit, it extends to you. God is with you, my friend. You're God's favorite. Not because of anything you've said or not said. Not because of anything you've done or not done. Matter of fact, I don't know about you, but I'm a little obnoxious and clueless sometimes. God's with you, not because of where you come from or who you know, but simply because God has favored you. God has looked at you and said, that one is mine. The good news, friends, the gospel news is that in all the good times and all the hard times, all the in-between times, God is with you. 3 months from today, today is September 25th, 3 months from today, Christians around the world will mark an important holiday, a holy day we call Feast of the Nativity. It started in Target about 6 weeks ago, but we call it Christmas. For us, for we who are followers of Jesus of Nazareth, whom we call the Christ, you know Christmas is about more than tinsel and lights and ho, ho, ho. Because at Christmas, we say that Jesus is Emmanuel, which means God with us. So we don't worship a God who made all that is seen and unseen and then went to play golf. And then we'll come back and check on us later and see how we're doing. That's not the God we proclaim. We do not worship and serve a God who's with us like a lifeguard is with swimmers, sitting up high on a watchtower, twirling the whistle, just waiting to blow it to whistle us out of the pool. That's not the God we worship and serve. As people of faith in Jesus Christ, we worship a God who is with us, who knows firsthand what it is to be human, who knows firsthand what it is to be at the very top. And also at the very bottom. A God who knows firsthand what it is to be falsely accused of a crime you did not commit and be denied due process. A God who knows what it is to be reviled as an outsider. A God who knows firsthand what it is to suffer. As people of faith in Jesus Christ, we worship and serve a God who is with us. Even some way, somehow, should we find ourselves in the very deepest pit there is. Joseph was obnoxious and clueless, but he had this one thing going for him. Joseph really got stewardship. Joseph understood what stewardship means. Now, I see you. When I say the word stewardship from this pulpit, I see you grabbing your pocketbook and your purse. And I know why that is, because see, over the years, pastors and church leaders have accidentally trained the people of God that whenever we say the word stewardship, it means we're about to build something and it's going to be expensive. Or it means we built something and it's expensive and we need to pay it off. But stewardship, of course, biblically speaking, simply means To manage carefully and faithfully what's been entrusted to you on behalf of the owner. So yes, stewardship is about dollars entrusted to our care, but as Christians, we know the Psalms. The earth is the Lord's and all that is therein, the world and those who live in it. We understand it ultimately all belongs to God. Stewardship has to do with how we manage all the things God has placed in our care. Yes, our money, but also our time. Also, the power that we have while we have it. Even our very bodies are entrusted to our care. Joseph was an exceptional steward of what was entrusted to his care. And like Joseph, whether we find ourselves at the top or at the bottom, whether we find ourselves in seasons of flood or seasons of drought, whether we are in the palace or the pit, we are to be faithful and trustworthy of all that God has given us to manage. And I think about us and our life together here as we live out our faith as First Presbyterian Church of Athens. My goodness, has God entrusted us with resources to manage for God's glory. My goodness, has God equipped us so well for participating in God's mission. Has God blessed us as we seek to create community where people seek the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, rejoice in worship, and go forth sharing the love of Christ with Athens and the world. So may we be faithful stewards of all that God has entrusted to our care. May we manage the things of God faithfully and well. And may we never, ever forget the Lord is with us. Thanks be to God. Amen.